chapter 1, beginning of verse 19. If you're using your pew Bible, that is page 637 in the New Testament. James chapter 1, verses 19 through 25. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Therefore, lay aside all filthiness and every flow of wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls. But be doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it, and is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this one will be blessed in what he does.
Appreciate the reading that Wes just did for us, and you may notice that that is our primary passage for the theme this year. And I'm going to incorporate several things both today, but especially next Sunday. And I want us to really to refocus on this passage. We'll really emphasize it next Sunday morning in the lesson as we wrap up our first quarter. We're talking about the man in the mirror. And today I want to look at the last thing in that first quarter that I wanted to emphasize. And that is the practice of journaling. And want to welcome everyone who's here today. I know we have some visitors in the audience, and we're glad you're here. And I hope you want to come back and be with us again in the future. This year, we are emphasizing in our lessons, the theme is the man in the mirror. And the whole idea, you may have noticed in the passage that Wes just read, is that we use the Bible as a mirror, as the Bible is saying there in that passage, that we use it to gaze into. Especially this first quarter, we're emphasizing that. Gaze into it. See ourselves. See a reflection of ourselves. See ourselves as God would see us. And then to determine where we might make changes. And of course, the man in the mirror is taken, and several of the younger people have remarked to me lately about that. You keep talking about Michael Jackson, you know. And indeed, it's taken from that song that Michael made so popular. And but it's a great song. It's great lyrics. And it's very scriptural, very biblical, for us to look into the Word of God and to recognize that the man we see, ourselves, myself, is the one I need to focus on and I need to change. I'm the one who primarily has that responsibility. And God expects me to do that. This morning I want to talk about a practice that's very beneficial in making changes. And that's journaling. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, this is the idea, obviously, of just simply writing things down. We're going to talk a good bit about it this morning. But the positive benefits of journaling are well documented in a number of different areas. For example, you can see the one I've got here. Doctors, many studies have been done, and doctors say journaling can help one double their weight loss. In other words, if you, like I was especially a couple of years ago, if you're at a point where you know you have got to get serious about taking some weight off of your body, having a diet or dieting is not enough. And one of the things that they found, and very consistently so, is that people who keep a food diary, they write down and I would say this, and I did this when I started this program. You write down every bite of food that goes into your mouth, and you're amazed. And I was really amazed, not so much at the amount of food I ate. And one of the things that I kept saying to myself is, I don't understand what's going on, because I don't really eat massive amounts of food. But I tell you what I found. I ate all the wrong things, and I ate them way too much. And I ate them on no schedule whatsoever. And studies have shown that when you do that, then you're not going to be that healthy. And I wasn't. So when you begin to write it down, it makes you see that. It forces you to look at it. And studies show that keeping a food diary at least 6 days a week, you can give yourself a break, but 6 days a week, you will lose about notice this, twice as much as those who just simply record what they're doing, say, one day a week or not at all. And that's according to the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, and they do a lot of studies like this. Let me tell you why. Here are some of the things they found. Let's say that a person's really been struggling with a weight problem for a long time, and they began to journal. They buy into this whole idea, okay, I need to write it down. I need to face everything I'm eating. I need to see where I am, what I'm doing. Commonly, and understand, all they set out to do was simply to write down, breakfast, I had two strips of bacon and an egg. You know, that's all they started with. That's all they planned to do. But commonly, they tended to record their thoughts, their victories. I did real good today. You know, it's almost like they gained a new friend in their journal. I did real good today, journal. You know, I did this, I did that. They began to record their victories, their struggles. I'm having a really tough time with such and such, so and so. And they began to explore that. I found when I started journaling, I started out with a list, you know, and I'm very list-oriented. But it grew and grew, and I found myself really looking forward to going to it. And I still have those notes over there on a, you know, in a Word document. I still have them. And I found it when I began to record all the things I was going through and really looking at myself. That's what we're talking about, evaluating yourself, that you begin to progress. You start really dealing with the situation. They started recording what helped them and obviously what hindered them. And various suggestions they ran across in my case, you know, I'd incorporate an article that I ran across, you know, on whatever, in news source. Or I'd record something I heard somebody say that, you know, I thought, well, that's a good point. And I'd write that down and that kind of, and certainly goals. And those goals we've talked about, breaking it down, and I had a goal, I had a long-term goal of getting down to a certain weight. I'm well over halfway there. Obviously, a lot of you guys have been very encouraging about that, and I appreciate that so much. But I've got my goals, and there are goals that are broken. You know, there's a long-term goal of 5 years, and it's broken all the way down to a weekly goal. Goals, they wrote them down. And obviously, it empowered them. Something else they noticed, these studies noticed, with people who were journaling, as it's commonly called, they were motivated to stick to the plan. There was something very powerful about having a journal, and as some people would say, being in touch with yourself. But there's something very powerful about it. The record, or the journal itself, became the motivator. That's a psychological thing that takes place. Something that goes on in your mind, but it is so important. I've said this often, and folks downstairs in my class hear me say this quite a bit. But your mind can be your worst enemy in anything you're trying to accomplish. And you know how that is. Things get tough, and you begin to say to yourself, this doesn't feel good, I don't like it, I can't do it, and on and on and on it goes. And eventually you get discouraged and you quit. But when they had a journal, when they were revisiting this journal at least, again, 6 days a week, in other words, these are people very serious about practicing this, when they were visiting the journal itself became the motivator, and here's why. Because remember, go back to some of the things we've talked about this quarter. They had a mission statement. And maybe incorporated into their mission statement is something like mine is. Within 5 years, I want to be healthy. You know, I don't want to nearly die every time I walk up the stairs to my study. And the idea of the mission statement was they faced it every day. They told themselves what they wanted to be. I know people, for example, that have had marriage problems. And they journaled. And in the journal was the mission statement, in such and such amount of time, I want to have the best marriage possible. I want a great marriage. And by facing that every single day, or 6 days a week at least, by facing that, they kept putting into their mind, and their mind kept saying to them every day, this is what you want. And they convinced themselves, that is exactly what I want. It motivated them. It inspired them. And so with these people, the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, their study in particular that I was looking at, their study found that these people motivated themselves because they had told themselves, this is what I want. And you know what? I want to be healthy more than I want that Reese's cup. I love Reese's cup. You guys know that. But more than I want it, you know, more than that, having that and that few seconds of pleasure and all of that comes with it, rather than having that, I want to be healthy. I want to live. And I've got my reasons for living. You know, my wife and my daughter sitting up here are two of the main reasons I've got. And I'm telling myself and motivating myself. And you know, the truth is, this works, you know, it's not just dieting or having a good marriage. But you know, a lot of people in this country, a lot of people I've found, and in fact, I'm amazed at some of the numbers, to be honest with you. But a lot of people have financial, I started to say problems, let me just say disasters, and live in this country according to a financial disaster. They don't have budgets. They don't live within their means. Credit card debt is outrageous in this nation. Student debt is outrageous in this nation. And it's a compounding problem that's getting worse year by year by year. You can go home and check that. Don't take my word for it. But what if you applied this same kind of thing we're doing to a financial plan? You have a mission to get out of debt. You have a mission to live within your budget. You write it down. You set goals for you to live within your means, to even save, or as Ed was talking about, to give as you know you should be giving. Could you accomplish that if you set a plan for yourself, an action plan, and you motivated yourself? You faced what you're doing. You wrote down every dime you spend to see, first of all, what you're really doing in life. You'll be amazed. I've done that. And it will almost scare you how much money you can spend and not even realize you're spending. And you're probably sitting there saying, no, it wouldn't scare me because I know that. So, you know. But you face it. And then it moves or morphs into what a journal really becomes with all of those things motivating you. What about your personal worship? Now, I'm not just talking about coming to church, although it should start with that. But your personal worship to God or your Bible study. What if you set a plan, had a mission to learn the Bible, said to yourself, faced it, I know nothing about this book. I really don't know anything. But I'm going to set a goal for myself, and within 5 years, let's say 10 years, I'm going to have a good, positive working knowledge of the entire Bible. Now, if that's all you, the only goal you set, you're going to get really discouraged. But then you break that down all the way down into daily goals. I will look at this passage today, and I will really study what's within, even if it's just one verse. 365 days later, how much more would you know? And if you journaled about it, you wrote about it, you really recorded your thoughts and your ideas and what helps you to learn the Word of God and on and on and on. Those things that these people were doing about dieting, if you did that about Bible study and personal worship to God, where would you be? And you know what studies have found? People have done studies about personal worship and Bible study and people setting financial goals or living within a budget and any other, practically any other conceivable thing you can think of. And right across the board, what they find is there is always, and I want you to understand that, always consistent, marked improvement. The person says, how important is it? You know, and I know exactly because I felt this way. Keep a diary? Me? That's what little girls do. You know, little girls have a diary, a little key, and they unlock it, stick it under their mattress. Me, keep a diary? No. You, journal. And that's why I call it that. It's the same thing. But you keep a journal. A daily, which is literally what the word journal means. It's a daily. It's of the day. It is you looking at you on a daily basis. You know, if I really gaze into the mirror on a daily basis and I motivate me to be better, anything that helps that is something I want to embrace. This is a proven technique. If you've never tried it, and I know a number of you do. I know a number of you in here already do this. If you have never tried it, try it just for 1 week. Set that as a goal and see where you are just by the end of the week. Even with respect to just one thing in your life you want to change. Write down everything you eat. Write down every amount you spend. Write down what you do in worship to God, etc., etc. Pick one thing and see where you are at the end of the week. And I'll tell you this, it won't take you long to get hooked. Because you will feel the power of change. When a person might say, okay, well, what does it have to do with the Bible? I believe this. You don't have to agree with this. But when biblical writers make entries in the Bible regarding their own personal spiritual state, I think they're journaling. Journaling in the sense that I mean it. I'll give you a couple of examples, and there are many. Those of you that were in my Wednesday night class, you know we ran across something in 2 Corinthians. We really talked about this. But look at the one in Philippians chapter 1. Now, this is a passage you'll know well, but I want you to listen to Paul. Paul is writing a letter to the Philippians. It's a letter about joy, obviously. It's a letter of a number of different things within it that he's encouraging them to do. But one of the things that he does in this is he makes a personal entry from time to time. And here's one of them. Look at Philippians 1 down in verse 21. For to me, notice this is personal. For to me, to live is Christ. To die is gain. What is that? I would say that's a mission statement. I would say that this is Paul declaring in a bold, simple statement what he is going to do with his life. My life is to live Jesus Christ. Not just for Jesus Christ, not just directed by Jesus Christ, but Jesus is my life. For me to live is Christ. And for me to die as a Christian is gain. What if you read that to yourself every day? You wrote it down and you read that as a mission statement every day. I will live Jesus every day and I will die and get great gain for having done that. Notice as he goes on here, if I live in the flesh, now he's beginning to break it down. Is my life going to end now? I'm in prison in Rome. Or am I going to live for a while longer? If I live in the flesh, this is the fruit of my labor. Yet what I shall choose, I wot not, or I don't know. I'm in a strait betwixt the two. You ever struggled about anything? You ever struggled about a great big choice in life? If I do this, if I do that, if this happens, if that happens, he wrote it down. I'm in a strait betwixt two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Nevertheless, and I should have put verse 24, but nevertheless, to abide in the flesh is more needful for you. What was he saying? He said, I'm torn. And that's what you would say sometimes. I'm torn. I'm old and I'm tired and I've worked hard and my life is Jesus. And if it goes on, if I live longer, it's going to continue to be Jesus. The end result is going to be the same. I'm going to heaven after I die. But I'm torn. Should I live longer? Should I want to live longer? What if I live longer? Well, I'll benefit people. There are people that need me. You know, this is the same kind of choice that people face. Older people that are sick and that are hurting and that are faithful to God. They've lived a long life. They've done a lot of work. And really and truly, even though a lot of people wouldn't understand this, they're just basically saying, I'm sick and I'm hurting and I'm tired and I'd like to die. It's fine. I understand life. I've lived for that moment of dying and going to paradise and of being in heaven with Jesus forever. But there are people here. Sometimes you have a wife or you have a daughter, or you have children, you have loved ones, you have brethren, as Paul was talking about. And they need you. And as long as you're here, you can provide something of great benefit to them. So I'm torn between that. I love you, Philippians. And I want to stay around for you, but really and truly, I don't like being in prison. I don't like suffering like this. I've been through a lot. And I'm ready to go on. He wrote it down. And it helps you to sort things out. And if you continue reading in this book, you see that. It helps you to see things in perspective. It helps you to deal with the emotions that get all tangled up in your mind and keep you from being as productive as you can be. It helps you to deal with that. It helps you to sort it all out. Paul was doing that. We're going to look at some of the Psalms here in a moment. But notably, when you look at the Psalms, you really see someone that is extremely personal, especially David. Extremely personal. And he journals. We just call them, he writes songs. They're very personal songs. We call them the Psalms. But he's journaling. These personal entries that you find in the Bible, and if you start looking for them, you'll see there are many of them. And it's not just Paul and it's not just David. But these personal entries, they reflect the spiritual journeys of these individuals. Now, there are a lot of people in the Bible we know nothing about. If I throw out the name Erasmus, you may know one entry in the Bible about him. It doesn't tell you anything about his life, and you don't know the man, neither do I. But do you feel like you, at least on some basis, know Paul? I do. I mean, there's a lot about the Apostle Paul. There's a lot that is personal about the Apostle Paul, sprinkled in here among all of the doctrine, etc., all the history. There's a lot that is personal. And I know some things about Paul. Just like getting to know someone that's alive, you know, that you go to church with or you live with or whatever it might be, you get to know these people. What about David? Do you feel you know anything about David on a personal basis? I do. Very, really very much about David. You see all of that. Just like the folks in your house or your friends or whatever, you see that. You see their struggles, you see their victories, etc., etc. These personal entries in the Bible, it reflects a spiritual journey. It wasn't always great. It wasn't perfect. They're not supermen. They're men. They're women. They're real people. They have highs in their life and they have lows in their life. They have victories. They have defeats. They struggle and they win. And we see all of that. We see them fulfilling their mission. For me to live is Christ. I am crucified with Christ. I die daily. Those are mission statements. That what they do with their lives is what they mean to do with their lives. You see David over and over again. I will do this and I will do this. Man had a lot of struggles in his life. A lot of failures in his life. But you don't see him saying, I will give up and never serve God again, do you? I will succeed and I will do this and I will do that. We see them with their mission. We see them with their goals. Setting those goals. I'm going to do this and I plan to do that. And some of them are huge, big goals. And some of them are just small goals. Things they're going to do that day. Daily. Small step goals. And they leave us an example of how to have a greater efficiency in our life by journaling as we achieve our goals. Look with me at a couple of the Psalms and we'll be done with the lesson. But I just want you to see some of this. And by no means, David wrote at least about 73 of the Psalms, I think, something like that. And we're just going to look at a couple of them. Look at Psalm 3 and listen to the personal language in this Psalm. Now, David apparently wrote this, and an ancient entry has him writing this when his son Absalom was rebelling against him and he was running from him to keep from killing him, really. He said, Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? And you have to understand, it wasn't just his son. It was all these people on both sides, you know, siding with Absalom, telling David, you got to kill him, all that kind of thing. How are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God. You ever had anybody question your being a Christian because you're going through so much in life? Yeah, boy. But Thou, O Lord, art a shield for me. You're my glory and the lifter up of mine head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and He heard me out of His holy hill. Notice how he's writing it down. I laid me down and slept. I woke up, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for You have smitten all my enemies upon the cheek. You have broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing is upon Your people. You know how personal this is? What he believes, the goals that he sets for himself, how he's going to live his life. Look with me at another one. Whoop, let's back up and do that one. Psalm 32. Now, this is a favorite psalm of many people. But Psalm 32, listen to how he says what he says about himself. Now, we know David failed, don't we? We know David had his sins, he had his problems. Blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man unto whom the Lord imputes not iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no guile. Now, that doesn't sound personal. That just sounds like a general doctrinal statement. Oh, but listen to this. When I kept silence, notice how he is writing down and reflecting upon how he did it in the past when it didn't work. You know, when you're trying to lose weight, one of the best things you can do is be honest with yourself about what does not work. When I kept silence, my bones grew old through my groaning or roaring all the day long. Day and night Your hand, God, Your hand was heavy upon me. My moisture is turned into the drought of summer. I acknowledged my sin unto Thee. This is when he begins to have an honest evaluation of self. I acknowledge my sin, and my iniquity I have not hid. I said, now here's a goal for you. Here's a positive statement of what he's going to do. I said, I will confess my transgression unto the Lord, and You forgave the iniquity of my sin. He's writing it down because it's powerful to do that. Just notice the gain, the benefit we've gotten from reading what he wrote down. And then imagine the power that it would have given to him. The motivation it would have given to him when he wrote it. Look at another psalm with me. Turn a page or so over to Psalm 34. And I love this psalm in particular. It's not as well known by any means. But he's had another setback in his life. This one probably involving Abimelech. And he says, I will bless the Lord at all times. Now notice that. I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt His name together. Notice, he's still personal, though. I sought the Lord, and He heard me. And He delivered me from all my fears. They looked unto Him and were lightened, and their faces were not ashamed. This poor man, notice this language. This poor man cried. Some people would look at this and would say, David was one of the richest men in the world when he wrote this. Yeah, but there are a lot of ways to be poor, ain't they? This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him, and the Lord saved him out of all of his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those that fear him. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusts in him. How motivated would you be to keep going if you wrote that down and read it every day? Oh, fear the Lord, ye His saints. There is no want, no lacking in those who fear Him. The young lions, they lack and they suffer hunger, but those that seek the Lord shall not want for any good thing. And he just goes on with that. I want you to look at one last one, and this one is, I guess, has been for a long time my favorite psalm. For a number of reasons, poetically, etc. But it's not just that. It's me. It describes how I felt as a child. A child that was very spiritual. I'll say it like that. And the place I always want to go back to spiritually whenever I find myself, well, straying away. Notice what David says here. And this is probably when David is alone. Perhaps this has to do when Saul is chasing him. A lot of, you know, don't really know, but just listen to it. O God, you are my God. Early. Some of your translations say earnestly, but the reason it does is because it means you get up early in the morning and get at it. So I love the translation, early will I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you in a dry and thirsty land. And here's the idea of I starve for God. He goes on to say, to see your power and your glory, so as I have seen you in the sanctuary. Because your loving kindness or your mercy is better than life, my lips will praise you. I want you to stop and think about what he's saying here. David is saying, you know, I'm going to get up early every day and start seeking God. I want to find God. I want to find what satisfies my thirst where no water can possibly satisfy. I need God. And he is positively declaring that as he writes this down. My soul, verse 5. My soul will be satisfied with marrow and fatness, and my mouth will praise with a joyful lips when I remember you upon my bed. It's one of the things that I love so much, because basically what David is saying is, I will from this point on get up with God and I'll go to bed with God every night. God will be my God. My soul will be satisfied when I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the night watches. Because you have been my help. You've been there for me, God. And so in the shadow of your wings will I rejoice. I'm not going to be like Jerusalem when Jesus wanted to bring them in under her wings, under his wings, and shelter them and protect them. They stubbornly refused that. I'm not going to be like that, David says. I want to be in the shadow of your wings. I need you. My soul follows hard after you, and your right hand upholds me. Do you see both that? Do you see what he's saying there? I understand how it works, God. I give it my best, and you pick up the rest. I do what I've got to do. I follow hard after you, and that's what I intend to do. And I know you will lift me up. And then he goes on to mention the point. Those that seek my soul to destroy it will go into the lower parts of the earth. They will fail. But because I rejoice, the king rejoices in God, everyone that swears by him shall glory. The mouth of those that speak lies will be stopped. Here's the point of this. Successful people journal. And they journal to maintain their focus. You can hear that in those songs. To track their progress. To get creative even. And to push themselves to do more and more. Your journal becomes not just a list of what you're eating or what you're spending. But it becomes a daily reminder to help you keep in touch with where you're going. And how you're getting there. It becomes a vital link. Remember how I said the journal, it was very strange how it just sort of morphed into the motivator itself. They had to be motivated to start it, but the journal became the motivator. It becomes a vital link to continuing the whole process. It's where the plan is written out. You revisit your mission, your goals, and you record your progress, and you outline your plan of action. And you're always doing that. You know what you have to do today to get to where you want to be. You outline your plan of action for the day, the week, the year, etc., etc. I'm going to make a change for once in my life. It's going to feel real good. And it really will feel real good. Success makes you feel good. It's going to make a difference. And I'm going to make it right. I'm starting with the man in the mirror and I'm asking him to change his ways. No message could have been any clearer. If you want to make the world a better place, you take a look at yourself. Then you make that change. Are you here this morning and you're not a Christian? If you want a really successful life, it begins by giving your life to God. As David said, I'm going to follow hard after you, but you will uphold me. If you believe in Jesus, that He is the Son of God, and this morning you'll confess that, you're willing to repent, to change your life. That's what we're talking about. If you'll be baptized this morning, God will wash away all your sins, all your failures, all your mistakes. He'll wash them away by the blood of Jesus Christ.